Good evening. I'd like to first call to order the public hearing on local law number A of 2012, opt-out of section 487 of the New York State Real Property Tax Law. This is public privilege, right? Not okay. Is there anyone who'd like to speak about the local law? Please identify yourself.
Brian Eden, North Sunset Drive, you guys. I'm going to speak generally, not directly to the technical issues, and someone will follow me with more specific recommendations. In the past 20 years, climate science research has become increasingly credible. The evidence is compelling to many of us that we face our most existential threat in many millennia. On the other hand, it appears that few have taken notice or interest. No climate scientists are interviewed on television or radio. Of the 839 questions asked of Republican candidates during the debates, only two were on the climate crisis. This is not a future problem. While the alarm bells are ringing, most folks seem to be in suspended animation and a state of paralysis. Are the issues so threatening we can't comprehend and act upon them in a timely way? This is not to denigrate the great work of some of the people here tonight. However, we are falling far, far short in relationship to the needs. We are waiting for the identification of a cheap, clean, and plentiful energy resource. Possibly as we warm, countervailing trends may reduce the most catastrophic impacts. After mitigation and adaptation measure, can we rely on geoengineering such as carbon dioxide removal or solar radiation management? We can't afford to wait for a miracle. The longer we delay substantial action, the cost goes far higher. The window for preserving the planet is rapidly closing. We need to act now. And then I have a discussion which we won't have time to do, but most of the subsidies on energy go to highly profitable corporations that are fossil fuel based. And right now they're opposing the extension of the production tax credit, which would mean that the last time that it expired, that it was a 93% reduction in renewable energy installations. So, and the groups are funded by the fossil fuel industry, and their slogans are throwing good money after bad and paying more for less. And they have the same approach to the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative and the renewable energy portfolio standards, which they feel are unwarranted impediments on the free market. When we look back in 20 years, will we be satisfied that we undertook bold and aggressive action to address climate change impacts? A low carbon diet can only be maintained if we continuously employ more renewable options. We have to set aside business as usual and become more agile and creative in addressing the constraints of current laws and regulations. When considering this legislation, the county legislature must be thoughtful and flexible so that it might be more fully supportive of this local community-owned wind power project. We need to structure the financial obligations to the municipalities and the school district constructively to ensure the viability of this worthwhile project. My colleagues will follow with more specific recommendations.
Thank you, Brian. Could you submit your statement?
Yes.
Can you pass up the written copy? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kenny Christensen. I'm a member of the Tompkins County Environment and Management Council, Special Energy Committee, and member of the state, resident of the city of Ithaca. And I was here 12 years ago in 2000 for do a cost-benefit analysis of solar panels for the library, and that was 12 years ago when we put those up. And Tompkins County's got lots of solar panels all over the place now. We're one of the best, one of the largest photovoltaic areas in the whole state right now. Just a couple other things. Back in 2000, we passed resolution, the legislature passed resolution agreeing to participate in the Cities for Climate Protection campaign to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by 20% by 2008, and we were almost successful doing that. Then in 2008, we passed the energy and greenhouse gas element of the Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan that gave us goals reducing our greenhouse gas emissions by 80% by 2050. The county's had a long history, in our history, I think, of trying to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and look at our energy use in the county. And I also just want to mention that on June 13, 2007, the Tompkins County Environmental Management Council passed Resolution 2-2007, which was in support of Enfield Energy. And back then we said that resolved that the Tompkins County EMC is in full support of developing wind energy in the county, for the Enfield Energy Wind Project. Pending successful completion of a full secret environmental impact statement, insurance that the project will not interfere with the county's public communication system, Watonga County EMC recommends that the county legislature offer its support for the Enfield Energy Wind Project. The Tompkins County EMC recommends the county legislature should explore possible options to provide capital financing to assist the development of the Enfield Energy Wind Project. Indeed, the Tompkins County Environmental Management Council recommends the county legislature should explore possible options to obtain long-term renewable energy contracts from Enfield Energy as a way of supporting the local development of renewable energy. And that passed unanimously by the EMC back on June 13, 2007, so almost 5 years ago now. So, and I believe the legislature passed a resolution kind of supportive of our resolution, so, I mean, we support the Black Oak Wind Project for a while. It was Enfield Energy back then. And just in terms of financing, with the, whether to exempt or not, in the EMC Energy Committee, we've kind of been thinking about lately that rather than having a pilot of a payment in lieu of taxes, that we might consider just having an ILT or an electricity in lieu of taxes, and thinking of trying to get, you know, an energy contract or something like that. And if we didn't take the, you know, tax payments for it, that would give them little cost savings and be able to maybe get off the ground a little bit more. And that right now, back in fall 2011, there were 16 wind energy projects already operational in New York State and 2 under construction and 25 more than under permit. And, I mean, as far as I can tell, none of them really community energy projects. So, I mean, something that we really be able to encourage in the county, I think it's worthwhile to try to encourage. And also, I mean, a lot of these have pilots, but none of them have islets or whatever. You know, none of them are just trying to get electricity in lieu of taxes. And the best I could figure, they're looking about, most of these pilots average about 5,000 or 8,000 annually per megawatt of capacity of these things. And if the Black Oak Wind Project was about 20 megawatts, all right, that would mean that overall, if we were, you know, if we were taxing them, say, over pilots of 5,000 megawatts, and if there's 5 cents a kilowatt hour, that'd be about 100,000 kilowatt hours per megawatt each year. So, at a 20 megawatt system, then that would be either about 2 million kilowatt hours per year, or 2 megawatt hours per year, or about 3% of the energy that's produced by Black Oak. So, you know, rather than just having a pilot of that would be, you know, a cash pilot type of thing, I think it'd be worthwhile to try to consider just having, you know, getting electricity and either saying, you know, about 2 million kilowatt hours per year, about 3% of the energy output would be something roughly equivalent to what other electricity, you know, what other wind farms are getting in New York State now. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Kenny. Do you have that in writing or just part of it?
I'll get it in writing, okay.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Would anyone else like to address the legislature on this matter?
I'm Dale Hoffman.
Good, Mike.
I'm Bill Halton from Mountain Danby. I'm just here as a citizen. I am a member of the Environmental Management Council, a rather new member, but I'm here to urge the county legislature to do whatever it can to support the wind farm. I think this local generation of electricity, it's a project that's close to us all, and I think it's very, very important for us to do whatever we can to support it. I do have to say up front that I have myself invested some money in the wind farm. It's not money that I expect to make a profit on. I'm thinking, in fact, it's just as likely that I'll lose it. But I believe in it so much that I'm willing to do that. And I hope the legislature will take the whole thing very seriously. I know you will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else?
My name is Taylor Peck, and my wife and I are both early investors in Black Oak Wind Farm, and 15 days ago we signed a contract with Renovus to install 42 photovoltaic panels on Gretchen's barn and 3 solar thermal panels on her house roof so that we can stop burning oil. And we are part of the intended collateral damage of this proposal, because I understand that in your process of negotiating with Black Oak, you have to also encumber every private alternate energy project in the county. I understand that you all, after a pilot is negotiated, then you all plan to unpass this law, and that no private projects will have their property taxes increased. I wonder how you can encumber a future legislature and a future assessor and future revenue, possible revenue, and saying that, okay, we aren't going to do it. We promise that we aren't going to do it. And since it's not in the law that this will only be a temporary law, it leaves me curious. I am less alarmed than I was 2 weeks ago, now that I understand that this is standard negotiating tactic, and that some other tax jurisdictions in this county already have passed their passed it, so that a pilot will be negotiated. Black Oak is fine with negotiating a pilot. They have been tended to it for years and years and years and years. You can go back and look in the record and see what John Ranches has been saying. I understand that there is a significant loss of revenue from AES, but don't try to make it up with Black Oak. Thanks a lot.
Anyone else?
I'm Joe Sliker. I'm the president of Renovus Energy here in Ithaca. You know, I understand being tax-starved and looking for tax revenue where it is, but I find it challenging because a lot of our business is residential, and a lot of our clients are responsible homeowners that are trying to do the right thing, and even the threat of something like this is already hurting my business. I mean, 2 weeks ago when I was here, there were all the people here talking about workers' rights and good jobs. Every single person that I employ is full-time, gets a living wage, gets health insurance. And just today, I just left a proposal presentation where clients are hesitating on moving forward with the systems because they feel the threat that their property tax might go up. So I just don't want responsible homeowners to end up even feeling the threat of their taxes going up because of making responsible decisions that they're trying to do. When people purchase solar, especially when they do it around here, they're doing it. It's a very emotional decision for people. People are really trying to use that purchase as a vehicle to make the world better as they can. And I think that anything that we do locally to dissuade that is not what we want to do. So I certainly understand needing tax revenue, but I really hope that we can find a way to do that that isn't effectively a punitive, regressive tax on responsible homeowners. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? For those who came in late, this is the public hearing on the local law. Okay. Would any staff or legislator want to speak at this point? Julie.
I was wondering if we could expand the language in our local law filing, either by adding legislative findings at the beginning or in Section 1 legislative intent. That would make it clear why we're doing this and make it clear that it is likely our intent to opt back in as soon as we can. And I'm concerned about what I've just heard, which is absolutely true. The unintended consequences of affecting an existing business who supplies solar panels for residences in particular is not what we had in mind at all. And it's very unfortunate that the state law does not distinguish between residential and commercial scale, so I hope we will lobby about that. But in terms of the language in the local law itself, I think so long as we don't change that one line that says we're going to opt out of it for now, we should be able to craft language that makes it clear that we're doing it because we have no choice. The state has given us no choice. I don't know if that will help local businessman or not, but I would love to try to do that. I spoke with our county attorney earlier, and he thought it was possible to modify it tonight, but it's also possible to do it at the time of a public hearing, which would then require another public hearing. So I'm not quite sure what would be the best thing to do tonight, Martha, but I'm glad of a chance to speak to this now.
Well, this is the public hearing.
This is it.
Right. I mean, we're prepared. We could vote tonight. There could be a motion to postpone it, but this is the requirement for a public hearing. That's what we're doing tonight.
I'm a little reluctant to try to craft all the language on the fly. I drafted something, but it isn't as complete as it should be, in my view, now that I've listened to this. I'm happy to move this, but I would like to have some reaction from my colleagues about it also.
Okay. I don't think this is the time to actually move that.
That's right.
Right. Okay. But I just thought you might want to speak about it.
I did.
All right. Carol and then Mike.
I would like to see us seriously look into whether we have the authority to pass a local property tax exemption for people who put in renewable energy. It would be a local property tax exemption on the portion of your, if on the year that you put in renewable energy installations. It would register our support for residential energy installation. And I would rather not have a quick answer as to whether we can do that or not. I would like us to take some time to look into whether there's any way we can find under taxation authority to do that. The federal government gives, you know, income tax exemptions. The state government decides whether to give income tax exemptions when people put in renewable energy. This law that we're passing now has to do with our property tax. And we're all sitting here agonizing. I understand why we're doing it. I believe our staff that this is the best way to go about this tonight. But I would like to see if there's some way that we can find to support renewable energy locally in some other manner, residential renewable energy. Thanks.
All right, at the risk of this is not really the time for a discussion, I would like to ask Jay Franklin and then go to Mike, our director of assessment, if you could speak to briefly to Carol's point, but also to the question of is there anything about this exemption that would affect, I mean, the current exemption. How does the current exemption relate to residential owners right now?
Yeah, right now we have about 100 people who have applied for this exemption in the county through all of the towns within the county. Unlike other assessing units, we're not simply adding in a value to exempt it off. We're looking at how much does a solar panel installation actually add to a property's value. Based upon the sales we have right now, we're not seeing any increase in value. So we're not simply adding value to decrease it off. But we are making people apply for this exemption so that in the future, if there is a positive effect to value, we will be able to exempt it off. It's having no effect on value now, so we're not doing anything. In respect to Carol, the New York State real property tax law is very specific in what taxing jurisdictions can do, either opting in or opting out of an exemption. And there is no provision within here to pick which type of improvements you want to exempt and which ones you want to be able to place on the assessment roll. So without any special legislation by the state legislature to create a new exemption, there's nothing that we can do under the current real property tax law to separate out residential and commercial different improvements.
So to be clear, if there's no added value represented by that installation, there's nothing to exempt.
Correct.
Okay. Mike?
That's what I was going to ask to hear from Jay Franklin.
Okay. Peter.
Well, I have been confused by this whole discussion for a long time because I don't really understand how it could be that there's no added value. I did speak to Jay before about a thought I had, is that we ought to, he can't measure anything, and I can see why that is, because, you know, houses differ in so many parameters. To be able to isolate one and find two cases that only differ because of solar power, you're probably not going to happen. But one thing we could do, which might clarify the discussion a little bit, is to figure out, it's not very complicated, to figure out exactly how much should it add to the value of a house, which is simply to compute the present value of the decrease in utilities that unit will bring in, say, 20 years. And then I would find it interesting if we could just calculate something like that and see how much money we're really talking about. But my guess is so far that we're really talking about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. There is no added value to it, and so the exemption doesn't mean anything. So I would be interested in seeing some kind of a number like that that made some sense, so we could at least think of what the scale of the added value should be.
Pam, did I see your hand up?
Yeah, sort of partially up.
Well,
it was. Okay. Thank you. I guess that if there was any way, this law would take away the ability to allow an exemption for any of these solar panels being added to into anything. Is there any way that if we did pass this, that once we are in the position to reinstate this law, that there would be the ability to keep track of all of the work that's been done in the meantime on homes, so that there might be some way that we could offer them something in return for that time. I mean, it just feels that this is not, well, obviously we're trying to do. We're hitting having unintended consequences here, and I find that not a good thing. I guess I would be most concerned about how long we're talking about in terms of how long we think this exemption is going to be in existence, or not in existence. In terms of negotiating time, in terms of their time frame, our time frame. Do we have any time frame on this right now?
I don't think it'll take long to be negotiated. I also understand that that basically we would want to wait until the farm is under construction. Once construction has begun, and then their pilot is set, and then we could turn this around. I would point out that, and I'm allowing this kind of discussion because what always happens is these questions are raised, you guys go home, a half hour later we have this discussion and you didn't hear what we had to say. So in the interest of explaining this, we are, we're going to be here for another year and a half before there's a new legislature. I'm confident we'll be able to take care of this. I also sense that the reason there's no added value perceived in the market is that the people who have invested in something that takes 10 or 15 or 20 years to pay back its value, those people aren't selling their houses. The only way Jay can recognize an increase in value is if there are sales of homes that have those installations. And since those houses aren't selling, it's only theoretical. So I'm deeply confident that this is much ado about nothing. I really don't think people have to worry about this, but I'm trying to allow this discussion so people can feel comfortable about it. Mike and Carol?
Yeah, it's not that this doesn't bring value, and it brings value to the whole community to have this. because it helps us in all the ways that we've just heard. But there are things that that are added to houses that don't increase market value.
That's right.
Think of swimming pools sometimes. Many times a swimming pool will not add value, market value, to the house when it's on the market.
Exactly. That's what I meant about value. Thank you, Mike. Carol?
Yeah, I just want to clarify my question earlier. And again, I'm not looking for an answer today, but I'm asking that we look into whether there is a way not... I understand that you're saying that we can't show a permanent change in property value that would carry into time. I'm asking whether there's a way to enter into an agreement with a residential property owner. Maybe it's a pilot, or maybe it is by some other mechanism, whereby the year in which they spend the money, we do something towards their property taxes. Maybe it's a pilot. Maybe it's we can write something that says we exempt that portion or a percentage of the portion of what you've spent putting in renewable energy. I'm just asking that we ask our staff to look into whether there is such a mechanism. The reason I'll support what's on the table tonight, assuming that we get to it later, is that I understand that we're not permitted to address it through a permanent change in property value unless we can actually document that. I'm talking about something that would be more temporary and immediate as a return. Thanks.
We have a very creative staff. I'm sure Jay will look for ways to develop the policy objectives that we have within the law. Peter.
Let me see if I understand something. I believe that the following statement is true, that if I have a house and I add two bedrooms and another bathroom to it, and I don't sell the house, I can expect my assessment to go up after that. If I add a solar panel to my house, my assessment will not go up. Are those two statements correct?
Correct. Almost. For the first one, because it is such a significant improvement, it would most likely increase your market value, and hence your assessment will go up.
And there's
panel.
Data because there are many other houses that sell that are the same except they have two extra bedrooms.
Correct. Now, if you were to renovate your kitchen or put in a pool, that may not change your market value because you're replacing something that's there and you may not have made it better, or the pool, especially an above-ground pool in upstate New York, is not a positive to value. So that type of improvement may not increase your value. It will not increase your assessment.
And just while I have the floor, is Martha correct that the problem is that no houses with existing solar power have been sold? That's why you can't see the difference?
That's part of the problem, but I also think part of the problem is not a perfect market. The real estate market doesn't always act the way that you think it should. With solar panels and these alternative forms of energy, they're still new, and I think the market's still hesitant. They're wondering if it's really going to work in 5 years or 10 years. So are they willing to pay that extra? I you know, markets don't move quickly to new factors in it. And I think that's a bigger factor than the lack of sales.
Thank you.
Will?
Jay, I think you've just captured, I think, part of our conundrum. Logically, putting on solar panels or building a solar, passive solar addition, just everything I know of the world, it is not only the right thing to do, but it will benefit the homeowner and the larger community, and it is adding value. But you're saying that there's a disconnect between that activity and the immediate market. Does it matter whether a panel system that's added on or could be just easily taken away versus like a passive solar addition or a new house? Would there be a difference?
There is a difference, and the law goes into an incremental cost, which is the added value of the building that's also part of the solar panel. And the formula that the state uses for that is very confusing and almost non-usable. When you're dividing by zero, it doesn't work. So there is that distinction, but yeah. But I don't know if a passive improvement would be considered part of this as well.
Okay. And secondly, I think we're all anxious. I mean, we understand why we're being forced into this situation, but based on the way the state law is written, I think nobody here wants to penalize what I think university recognizes a good thing. And we want to, is there any way, but we don't know exactly how quickly we could undo this, this change. Is there a potential for people being caught in the short term, being penalized, if you suddenly discover that the market is beginning to reflect increased value?
People are being caught now in the middle. Now, you have to remember that the town of Enfield opted out of this exemption back in 2010. So for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years, the exemptions that we've received in the town of Enfield will not be applicable for the Enfield town tax, which is about $5.50 per thousand, I think. The county tax for Enfield is about $3 per thousand. Now, the Ithaca City School District opted out in March of this year. So we're keeping track of those dates that they've opted out of and the date that the application was received in our office. So we are keeping track, and people have lost out and people will lose out. But, you know, until we see a change in the market, we're not simply going to add in value, because that would penalize people as well.
Right.
Because it's not just, you know, they would receive a break on the town, county, and school, but any fire district taxes, ambulance district taxes, all of the special district taxes, they would still pay on that higher value, regardless of whether we're opting out or in of that exemption. So we're being very careful on not adding value just to add value.
Thank you.
Kathy.
Thank you. I think everybody's displayed the angst that we've gone through with this decision. But I find myself in agreement with Martha Robertson in saying that it's for the good of the county. And, of course, I'm paraphrasing what I heard her say. I think that for us to do this quickly is the most important thing, rather than try to tailor an untenable circumstance that will have unintended consequences if we dally. So I know it's an uncomfortable situation, and everybody's expressed that it's not one that we want to be in. However, we're in it, and it's up to us to make the decision. So for myself, based on what I've heard, I believe that the thing to do is to go forward with this for now and to get it over with as soon as possible. And the hearing, such as it is, hasn't presented me with any compelling information, although I have to admit, hearing the fears and the concerns of the public and the small businesses is really trying, and I can't imagine what it's like for y'all. But that's why we took this on, and when we look at the big picture, we have to say, looking at the county, it's right for us to do this. The other municipalities have already opted out, and I think it's the way for us to go, just so y'all will know what I'm thinking.
Thank you. There's okay, just a minute. Yeah, you can come to the microphone. The IDA meets on Thursday. The IDA is the agency that actually will set up a negotiating team to negotiate the pilot, whether the county opts in or not, or opts out and then is part of the pilot or not. We have to do that for the school and the town. So that'll be set into motion on Thursday. Go ahead.
You actually just partially answered one of my questions, which is if you are starting to negotiate the pilot now, even though, and yet previously you said you will negotiate the pilot when construction starts. Well, construction isn't of the wind farm.
No, the pilot, we negotiate the pilot with the company. Once construction begins, then that is sort of set. That's established. That becomes, it can't be unnegotiated. It can't be changed. That will be the
even the construction is not planned until next year, but you're negotiating the pilot this year.
Right. I mean, you know, I think it's important. I mean, we don't know when construction will begin. It's important that we're prepared. And the other two municipalities have already, or jurisdictions have already done it. It's time to get going.
Okay. Then back on the residential part, I've seen the paperwork, which we can't fill out yet because the project isn't complete, that if this were last year, we would have filled out and we would have gotten the exemption for the solar panels.
There's no exemption because there's no added value. There's nothing to exempt. The exemption would only be on the, is only on the incremental addition of value related to the solar panel.
Correct.
So if there's no added value recognized by the assessment department, there's nothing to exempt.
But
which is the situation there
is paper,
right now.
There is paperwork that I would have filed with the county to ask for an exemption, and yes, you would have given an exemption of zero. But the exemption is there because it also, this is not a one time only exemption. This is an exemption on the property, on that part of the property, for the foreseeable future. So at some point, I understand you all are going to undo this after the pilot is negotiated. But the people who have their projects in this interim time, what are we supposed to do with this paperwork that asks for the county property tax exemption? Because it will not be applicable from tonight until whenever you all undo the law.
Go and fill out the paperwork. Jay has a file. All right. Jay will take your paperwork and hold on to it, and he knows exactly what to do with it. We will be, I really think everybody can calm down. I really do. Okay. Anything else? I'd like to close this unusual hearing. All right. Come on. I guess I can't close it.
It seems like there's a lot of question about the value and how to compute it. And I would just like to offer that I've got millions of ways to do that. There's a lot of resources out there ranging from the extremely simple of if you're offsetting X dollars of utilities, therefore you can afford X more dollars of mortgage. There's a lot of other things in place from other assessment offices elsewhere that I've just received of full forms that look at how exactly to calculate it. So I would be happy to offer that information to anybody if it helps understand what the value is so that we could have a better understanding of that locally, for what it's worth.
I'm going to answer that, and I'm going to close the hearing. Value in this sense has a very specific meaning in the law. Jay Franklin is the administrator of that of our office and is the expert on this field. When it comes to convincing a homeowner that there's value in installing such a thing, that's a different meaning of the word value. And I'm sure you do have a lot of information that people can benefit from. In terms of property value, property assessment on your house, Jay's the expert here, and I think people are going to be okay. So I would like to close the public hearing. Thank you very much for your patience and your interest. I'd like to open the May 15th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Ms. Chalk, I'm here. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsey?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa has asked to be excused. Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
And I have a couple of proclamations tonight. Is Patricia Vincent here? Betsy Doling. Come on up, please. I have was told Patricia Vincent would be here. This is for Mental Health Awareness Month in Tompkins County. And Betsy, for a year? How long has been the acting director of mental health for Tompkins County? Since October. Whereas children's mental health problems are real, common, and treatable, and whereas untreated mental health problems can disrupt children's functioning at home, school, and in the community, and whereas parents and family members are usually the first to notice the signs of decline in school performance, poor grades despite strong efforts, constant worry or anxiety, repeated refusal to go to school or take part in activities, frequent temper tantrums, depression, sadness, or irritability, and whereas early identification, diagnosis, and treatment can help children reach their full potential. And whereas the community places a high... Pat, come on up. Whereas the community places a high value on the mental health of all its residents by providing options, encouraging services, and financially supporting the mental and physical health for everyone's well-being. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2012 as Mental Health Awareness Month in Tompkins County, and call upon the citizens, government agencies, public and private institutions, businesses, and schools in Tompkins County, New York, to recommit to our children and their families and to increase awareness and understanding of mental health and the need for appropriate and accessible services for all people with mental health conditions. And Patricia Vincent is from the Mental Health Association, Tompkins County. So I just want to thank you both for coming.
The week of May 8th through the 10th is Children's Mental Health Awareness Day week, and I can't tell you how much this means to us at the Mental Health Association. We work very hard for our kids in our community, dealing with their everyday issues and the stigma that they must go through throughout their whole days. And I encourage you all, we've got the movie Bully coming to Cincinnati this Wednesday night, and there's going to be a panel discussion there, so I encourage you all to go to that. Our kids go through so much trauma. And thank you again, Martha,
and sure,
for recognizing the Mental Health Association. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. And Betsy, would you like to say anything?
I just wanted to thank all of you for the recognition and acknowledging that this is a serious issue that we deal with. I've appreciated everyone's support over the last year and a half, and thank you.
And Lisa Holmes, Director of our Office for the Aging, if you'd like to come on up. Whereas Tompkins County is a community that includes over 16,000 citizens aged 60 and older, and whereas Tompkins County is committed to assisting all individuals maintain their health and independence in later life, whereas older adults in Tompkins County have an important role in sharing knowledge, wisdom, and understanding of the history of our community through interactions with children, teens, and adults from other generations, and whereas the fruits of knowledge and experience can be effectively transferred from generation to generation through meaningful social interactions, and whereas interactions with family, friends, and neighbors across generations enrich the lives of everyone involved, and whereas our community can provide opportunities to enrich citizens young and old by emphasizing the value of including elders in public and family life, creating opportunities for older adults to interact with people of different generations, providing services, technologies, and support systems that allow older adults to participate in social activities in the community. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim May 2012 as Older Americans Month in Tompkins County, and urge every citizen to take time this month to honor our older adults and the professionals, family members, and volunteers who care for many of them. Our recognition and involvement of older Americans can enrich our entire community's quality of life.
you all. I think it's a great thing that we can take this time to acknowledge the tremendous resources that older adults bring to our community. Very often we hear a lot of the negative sides of aging and you know, kind of the looming baby boom as the potential drain on our community. And I think that now is a very good time to also acknowledge the tremendous resources in terms of knowledge, experience, material resources that older adults bring to our community. Many of you may know that USA Today noted Ithaca as one of the top 10 places to retire in the country. We're also experiencing faster demographic growth than previously anticipated. We've seen 36% increase in our older adults since the last census, and an 89% increase in that leading edge of the baby boomers between age 60 and 65. So we have a lot of challenges and opportunities ahead of us with these demographics, and so it's good to acknowledge the strengths that the older adults bring to our community, and to rise to the challenges as a community to provide the network of supports and services to make sure that they're available for people when they need them. So thank you very much to the legislature and to this caring community. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. I would like to reorder a couple of things. I think Resolution N will come up early tonight under Joe's report. And when we get to the first resolution after the consent agenda, I'd like to ask that we move G, Resolution G, up. That is under PDEC, so that Heather Filiberto can go home. Oh, dear. You needed to be out by 6:30. All right, we'll do that right after public privilege of the floor. Okay. We're just winging it tonight. All right, public privilege of the floor. I have one person signed up on it. If there's anybody else who'd like to speak, you can just come up after Cheryl Nelson. Just 3 minutes to speak, and Kathy will help you keep time. Thank you.
My name is Cheryl Nelson. I reside at 477 Groton Road, Freeville, New York. On Thursday, May 10th, I resigned from Tompkins County Employment after 37 and a half years. For the past 5 months, I was the acting highway manager, underfilling the position in the title of Public Works Administrator. I want to take this opportunity to publicly thank residents, including business owners, vendors, farmers, and municipal officials that took action steps to try to keep me in the position. I especially want to thank the county highway employees for everything they did to keep me retained. It is difficult to find words to adequately express my gratitude. The events of the past few months have given me a clear picture of this organization, and I know now friend from foe and lip service from logic. For more than a decade, legislators, residents, employees, and other municipal officials have expressed dissatisfaction with the highway management. The legislature's attempt to try to resolve any issues in public works is to throw some more middle-aged men with degrees in to fix the problem, preferably engineers. While it hasn't been proven, it has been proven that that wasn't the solution. Highway managers came and went, and the issues still remained. Then a quasi-commissioner of planning and public works position was created. Still, the problems continued. Although I have neither a penis nor a pedigree, I could see the issues, knew I could help since I grew up in public works, and could relate to the issues firsthand. But how could Tompkins County, home of academic meccas, ever allow a nearly 60-year-old uneducated woman to be at the helm? Despite the fact that she has excellent working relationships with other municipalities at all levels, understands and delivers customer service, has worked positively with all county departments, and has skills and tenacity to deal with long-running personnel matters that were negatively impacting the organization, and knows the county systems inside and out. The answer must be that she just doesn't quite fit the model for highway manager. Words recently used to describe improvements in highway include excellent, outstanding, it's about time you were in that position, and this is the first time a highway manager ever returned my call. This organization touts diversity, has tweaked job descriptions so certain individuals could be eligible for hire, spends countless hours in sessions with employees to ask for inputs on improvements in the work environment to make them feel included. Maybe if I were African American, Asian, Hispanic, disabled, or a member of some other underrepresented group, I could have stayed. The events of the past few months have shown me that inclusion is for some, not all. 2 weeks ago, Dooley questioned how could I continue to work since I am retired. There are a lot of people that draw their pension to the cap and then suspend it if they continue to work. Retirees that continue to work offer a wealth of knowledge at a reduced fringe rate, a win-win situation. There are many county employees continuing to work while drawing their pension, so much higher in the food chain than here than I am. Why am I singled out for that discussion, and why wouldn't you welcome it since it saves money? During this process, members of the community told me that when they called their representative to this body to enlist support for the status quo, they received responses such as, I'm not on that committee, or I guess there's a process in place, but I'm not sure what it is. Members of the search committee have even shared that they question why the urgency to find someone new when things were working well under the arrangement in place. Once a successful candidate was announced and it became clear that the majority of highway employees were not behind the selection, I received calls from Joe, Carol, and Martha telling me that I had to get behind the decision, I had to tell the staff to get behind the choice, I needed to get the staff to not continue to speak out, and I had to make way for a smooth transition so he can be successful. I was also accused of orchestrating the staff's actions, an insult to the integrity and intelligence of both the highway staff and me. It's a sign of a process flawed when big hammers have to fall and start forcing round pegs into square holes. A good process could have resulted in a successful outcome for all. Carol and Martha, two women who spend countless hours exercising their civic activism while telling me to tell others not to. Hypocrisy at its finest. This organization keeps asking for staff to help in finding their ways to save money. Yet over $7,500 has been spent from an already insufficient highway budget to cover advertisements and travel expenses for the candidates, and more expenses will be coming, money that didn't need to be spent. The job descriptions of the director and assistant were mashed and mangled by the F&I committee instead of following the normal personnel route, a fine example of the dysfunctional micromanagement of this organization. I'm nearly done. Although lots of time and money have been spent to find the next savior to run the highway division, I want to assure you that while it was happening, the highway staff and I were busy at work. We developed the 2012 road and bridge program and a solid draft plan for the ensuing 4 years. With a mild winter, we prepared those roads to get a jump start on construction season. We purchased and implemented a new communications radios to be tied into the county's new system and worked with FEMA to get $150,000 of storm damage reimbursements back into county coffers so it can be spent on needed maintenance issues. We filled vacancies, developed strong communication and team processes to form effective and efficient work. We opened some bridges, posted
Cheryl, you can submit your whole statement. That your time is up.
I'm off two more paragraphs. Worked with stakeholders to try to develop a process for repairing the extreme erosion problem on South Street in Trumansburg. Participated in conversations about shared services and fleet maintenance and updated the 20-year capital plan, just to name a few. I just wanted you to be sure that I wasn't resting on my laurels and filing my nails. The staff stepped up and responded to being treated with respect, an exercise you could all learn from. I left last Thursday extremely sad to leave the highway staff. It has proven to me that they are second to none. I also left feeling sad that the organization, which I had worked for so long, seemed to be doing a lot of talking about me and taking me for granted once again. My next tour of duty here, if I had stayed, would require me to just suck it up and step aside for the next boy wonder. Through this process, a lot of people have seen the dirty underbelly of this organization exposed, and it defies logic. I leave here proud of my accomplishments, but knowing that I still had many things left to offer and a long to-do list. But reaching the pinnacle of being a highway manager, if only for a short time, would make anything else pale in comparison. As disappointed as I am in the flawed process and the outcome of it, I expect more from the organization that is supported with my tax dollars. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to address the legislature? All right, I'm just going to ask, Will to take the Resolution G and to take that so that we can help Heather get to pick up her daughter in time.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you, Martha. So this is coming out of PDAC, and it's Resolution G in your packet, approving the issuance by the Tompkins County Development Corporation of up to $2,400,000 aggregate principal amount tax-exempt revenue bonds, Ithaca Neighborhood Housing, Inc. Project, Series 2012, and I so move.
Second by Pam. Any discussion? Carol.
I just have to recuse myself from this vote. I do know that the director of Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services was expecting to be here at 6:30, assuming it's because he saw how late it was on the agenda. He's on his way over here, but anyway, I will recuse myself because I have a personal connection to this organization.
Okay, we understand. Any other discussion or questions? Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jay is still here. Jay, I had a question regarding Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Service. There are a number of properties that are listed in this bond resolution. Can you tell me if Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services pays property tax on these properties?
Without really looking at all of them, the last time I did, I believe all of these are either wholly taxable or partially taxable. I think the Henry St. John building is in here, and there's a small exemption on there. Most of these properties fall under real property tax law 581A, which states that I have to value the property based upon their actual income and their actual expenses, not any market rent in case they have any rent subsidies and they rent to lower than what market-based rent would be. But I would guess that most of these are taxable properties.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? We're ready to vote. You're right in time, Paul. All in favor of Resolution G, please raise your hand. We don't need a roll call, but I count 13 with any opposed? Abstaining. Okay. 13 and no opposed and one abstention. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Hope you can get to pick up your daughter in time. All right. Thank you, Paul. You're welcome to stay or not.
No.
All right. Then we are to legislate. Are there any municipal officials out there tonight? I don't see anyone. All right. Legislator privilege of the floor. Frank and Carol.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, with regard to Cheryl Nelson's statement, I would ask that the clerk record it in its entirety in the minutes. I don't know if a copy was submitted, but I assume a copy is available. Secondly, just a reminder, today is, if we're out of here, I know Brian's always concerned about this, but he can't vote in this particular election. The Ithaca City School District vote is up today.
Well,
he can't vote in the Ithaca City School District one, but he can vote in Groton. But at any rate, we'd like to be out of here if you can arrange it in time.
It's up to you guys.
Before we meet again, we were treated to an announcement about the Dryden the parade that will take place on Memorial Day in Dryden, and I don't want to steal Mike's thunder, but just a reminder that I hope to see some of you at the parade. And I'll have a more extensive report from the Public Service Commission regarding NYSEG for you at the next meeting. If it's appropriate, I think, is Lisa Holmes still here? No, she left. She left with a proclamation regarding senior citizens, and I just wanted to tell you that Joe Mariana is now an official member of the senior citizens community and probably will take advantage of Lisa's, all of the advisory that Lisa can give you.
Just heading to an ARP reception right after this meeting, so thank you.
That'll be a year early, Joe.
I know.
Carol and Kathy.
Hi. Thank you, Martha. I just wanted to make sure people knew that TCOG and Cooperative Extension are holding a forum on gas pipelines this Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. in the Borg Warner Room at the library. I realize it conflicts with a whole bunch of other things, but that was set to coincide with their meeting. The topic of this, gas pipelines, what municipalities need to know. There are 20 interstate natural gas pipeline systems that crisscross the region from West Virginia to Maine, and thousands more miles of new pipelines will be needed as part of this whole operation. They will be addressing things like the difference between gathering, transmission, and distribution lines, each of which have their own sizes and needs and patterns, which agencies have jurisdiction over the various types of lines, how pipelines are permitted, regulated, and monitored, and how municipalities can prepare. Presenters include our own Sharon Anderson from Cooperative Extension, Jim Austin from the New York State Department of Public Service, Deb Goldberg, managing attorney with Earth Justice, an office there, and Megan Thoreau, who's a planner with STIRB. So I encourage people to come or to pass a long word about that. Thanks.
Thank you, Carol. Kathy Luz.
Oh, thank you. I want to start out by just acknowledging Cheryl Nelson's remarks and saying that as a woman in a non-traditional job, I'm frequently reminded of the high barriers that women in non-traditional jobs are expected to not only scale but excel at. And I want to just take a moment to say to Cheryl and to all people that are of underrepresented groups who strive to do their best, how much it's appreciated when they're able to do their jobs with the grace and the style with which people like Cheryl have brought to the position. And just want to say that that appreciation is often too late, but in many of our minds, it's always there, especially those of us who have shared the struggle. Secondly, I want to say how pleased I was to hear Pat Pryor on the radio on Tuesday after getting the pleasant shock of hearing my president, Barack Obama, finally come out and say something positive about gay marriage. And I want to say that I thought that Pat comported herself quite well in discussing the nuances of the issue. And if you felt at any time like talking about it, I want to commend you on the way that you handled it. It's a dicey subject, and it's one that the world and the nation and the communities are finding ways to shed lights on, but it's something that I think that you handled with diplomacy and also very forthright analysis. So I just want to say for myself, you know, hearing the president say that he thinks that same-sex marriage should be legal was, as an openly gay person for my whole life, I never thought I would hear a sitting president say that, even though I know in my heart it's the right thing. It was an amazing day, and it was really capped off the next day by hearing Pat talk on WHCU about it. Oh, the irony. So, but Pat, you did a good job, and to everybody else in the community, I want to say, yay!
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you very much, Kathy. And that podcast is on WHCU on the web. Anyone else? Mike.
We're approaching graduation season for our universities and colleges, and our TC3 college will be having its commencement on Thursday, May 24th. We've all been invited to attend. I hope that many of us can come to that this year. They like to see the legislators from both counties come and to support so many young people and middle-aged people and older people who have worked so hard to get their degrees and certificates there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Good reminder. Dooley, was that? Did you have your hand up? And then Leslie.
Yes, but I'm not really a bicyclist anymore, so I feel a little strange doing this. But I was really excited to read about this Friday being Bike to Work Day, Friday, May 18th. And to make it even more attractive, there are a number of organizations setting up breakfast stations for people biking to work, and I'd like to run through that list. Bank Alley on the Commons from 7:30 to 10 a.m., the Human Services Coalition, Creating Healthy Places in Downtown Ithaca Alliance. You can get a good free breakfast there. West Hill, corner of Elm, Floral, and Hector, 7:30 to 9:30 a.m., hosted by Finger Lakes Bicycling Club and bikeithaca.org. In Fall Creek, at the Cayuga Street Bridge near Ithaca High School, again 7:30 to 9:30 a.m., hosted by Fall Creek Neighbors. Northside, 3rd Street at Madison Avenue, same time, hosted by Ithaca Monthly Meeting. College Town, Ithaca Car Share office at 307 College Avenue, same time, hosted by Ithaca Car Share. At Cornell, 7 to 9 a.m. in front of Helen Newman Hall, hosted by Cornell Wellness. Teagle Hall, hosted by Cornell Facilities. And at Ithaca College, Texter Hall near the flagpole, hosted by the Ithaca College Sustainability Initiative. And for people who want to get started cycling, the Finger Lakes Cycling Club hosts a slow ride each Thursday evening, spring through fall. The ride starts near the Cayuga Medical Center at 5:30, and it goes on non-heavily trafficked roads so that you can get your feet under you. The Friends Bike Clinic, founded in 2011 as a project of Ithaca Monthly Meetings Earth Care Committee, they offer bike repair clinics for free at the Quaker Meeting House at 3rd and Madison Streets on the four Sundays from 1 to 3. And finally, Recycle Ithaca Bicycles, which has been around for 20 years and it's now at Southside Community Center, offer hands-on bicycle maintenance. You donate old bicycles, they'll fix them up. And it makes it sound as though one can really do a good job of riding in Ithaca. The roads almost cooperate. There still aren't very many bike lanes, but this sounds like a wonderful way to get started. Thanks.
Thanks, Julie. Leslie, and then Will.
RIBS is a program at the Southside Community Center, but just so people are aware where it's located, it's not at the Southside Community Center, but at the corner of West Buffalo and Meadow Street.
Right.
I think it might be 530 West Buffalo. So thank you, Julie, for that information. Kathy, you took all the words out of my mouth, so you need to stop reading my mind. But I do want to echo Kathy's yay in response to our president's announcement and declaration of his support for same-sex marriage in this country. I really do. Like Kathy, I never thought that I'd see it or hear it happen, but it has. And I want to also acknowledge Cheryl. Cheryl, thank you for coming and speaking. We know that too often many of our employees leave and they might have things they want to say, and it may not be the most kosher thing for a lot of people for me to sit here and speak to it, but I will. And so, and they don't. They don't speak up. We don't normally hear a lot of times what is going on for folks. And so I do appreciate hearing your thoughts and your feelings on how all of this has played out. I wish the outcome could have been different. I was saddened to hear that you were resigning and wish we'd had an opportunity to connect. We were trying to. We played phone tag for a while. But no, I hear in your comments, and I do have to speak to it, the concern of the county's presumption, or what it presents itself around issues of inclusion and diversity, and will assure you and all of us that we will continue to work on those issues to make our county an organization that's a model organization that supports inclusion of all our workers and supports non-traditional workers, supports people in non-traditional roles, etc. So I do want to acknowledge and really appreciate your frankness in coming and speaking to us. Certainly it probably rubs raw. That's the reality. It does, you know, because, you know, we don't want to hear that we've been doing things to make our employees not feel well. We try our best, and I know how much I appreciate the work you've done, and wish we could have figured out a way for you to continue to support us. I'm not giving up. Maybe, you know, that things are, you know, a little up where it is right now, but they may be things that we can talk about. Who knows? I can't make promises, but who knows? And I know that you have an affinity to Tompkins County and the Highway Department. You do. Otherwise, you will not be here speaking. And I really want to acknowledge and appreciate that. Thank you.
Jim, and then Will.
Yes. I too want to speak about what Cheryl said, but I'm going to take a different tact. I do not want anyone to understand from this meeting that the process that the county set up to hire a new highway director was any way wrong. We followed a strict process. We had a wide and varied search. We had many people from different parts of the organization taking part in this whole program. And I'm confident that we did this in the best possible way. Always there's situations that happen where people are unhappy about the outcome. And I am sorry that you're unhappy, but the county has not done anything wrong in this process. And I do not want that impression to go out to the airwaves and, oh, yes, it's the county doing a deal again. We followed the process. Everyone understood what the process was at the beginning, and it would follow through to its goal. And we have a person who is the head of the highway department now.
Thank you, Jim. Will.
Thank you, Martha. I want to thank Dooley for making us aware of the many opportunities being offered to bicyclists in the coming week. Dooley neglected to mention one very exciting new development that is not only for bicyclists, or eventually will be for bicyclists, more immediately for pedestrians. This afternoon, there was a grand announcement, essentially, of state support for the Black Diamond Trail, which will eventually connect all of our state parks. But the first section will be 8 miles, essentially starting from Cass Park, going out toward Deganic Falls Park. And this is a trail that follows the route of the old railway line there. And it is walkable right now, and I have done it. And it's actually bikeable for a portion of it. But there were two sections where there were major obstacles in the sense of crossings of gorges where the bridges were not safe to cross. And there has, as you may be aware, now money flowing that will be rebuilding these, making these passable. And the hope is that by this time next year we will be able to go out and do it. The project is happening through the combined efforts not only of the state parks but the city and the town and a lot of citizen volunteers. So it's a really, really exciting project. And open invitation to anybody who wants to go out for a walk or a bicycle ride. I've got some extra bikes, and I love biking. So please join me. Two other things. As everybody's aware, the Ithaca Festival is coming up. I have not yet bought my button. I don't see anybody else here, but May 31st to June 3rd, it's a great event, and I will be out there for the parade, and we should all join in. And finally, I wanted to mention something that I heard on the news. Maybe other people know more about it, but apparently there an issue that we debated about a year ago or so about the secure communities, mm-hmm. Which essentially requires local law enforcement to turn in anybody arrested and run them by the ICE and FBI database. And there has just been a decision that will require New York State to opt in, including this county. And I'm hopeful that we can have a discussion in public safety, Peter, about ways that we can minimize the damage, because I think this is a very, very ominous development. I'm very, very sorry this is coming down. And we should be giving attention to this. So thank you.
Thank you, Will. Pam and then Peter.
Excuse me. Yes, I too was impressed with President Obama's decision to support same-sex marriage. And I was reminded that in the early 1990s, there was a local law Local Law C was proposed before this county legislature, banning discrimination based on sexual orientation. And the response and interest in that law was quite remarkable. And I came to the public hearing. There were so many people that they had to move it into the courtroom. And at that meeting, the local law failed. And at the end of the meeting, people got up to leave, and there was this group of people who were exhilarated by that loss, and were standing out in the hallway. And I stood inside, and I ended up standing inside with a group of gay and lesbian people who were too scared to go out in the hallway. They didn't know what to do. They felt trapped. We were actually in the corridor behind at the back of the courtroom. And so finally, someone said, well, we've got to go out there. And people started chanting, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. And I marched with them out, and I just remember it was palpable, the fear, among the people who were part of this group, and they had to run this gauntlet of these very strong advocates on either side who were out to defeat them and had defeated them temporarily. Mm-hmm. But that was a very powerful moment for me. And I have cared so much about this issue for a very long time now, because I saw what impact that kind of hate, that kind of intolerance had on the people who were being directly affected by it. And so I'm very grateful to our president that he has taken a stand in this country that is important and is forward-looking. And is in the spirit of our best moments in this country of expanding our inclusiveness, and I really commend him for that. I would like to say that, in fact, that local law was eventually passed, that a very courageous county legislator who lived out in the district where so much of this anti-feeling was changed his vote and came out in favor of Local Law C. And so it was a good ending in Tompkins County, but we are not without our major problems in this community, and we need to work on our own tolerance and our own sense of community. And I would like to thank Cheryl Nelson for coming in. I think it's very important for us to hear what people have to say to us in terms of how we operate. I think we always can improve. I think Cheryl has done yeoman's work for our county. The fact that she was in a non-traditional job for all those many years, I think that it is a testament to her strength of character, and I'm very grateful to her for the kind of service that she offered to our county.
Okay, I've got Peter.
Yeah, a couple of things. About 2 months ago, I sat here and made a brief statement that was pretty upsetting, namely that the number of inmates in the jail had gone up by some unbelievable amount and far exceeding the capacity of the jail, and that we were boarding out very large number of inmates at a quite a large cost. We started a project to try to understand the reason for that uptick, and there have been various difficulties in carrying through that research, but I am pleased to report that while we don't understand why, the problem seems to have gone away. And at the moment, we have either 80 or 81 inmates and one board out. Which is the more or less what the jail population statistics were for the most of the previous year. So I'm pleased to report that. And regarding what Will said, yes, I'm aware of that. I doubt there's anything we can do. It follows from a Justice Department decision that the law does not allow states to opt out, but that the law requires all states to comply with it. So that's the Justice Department decision.
Thank you, Peter. Pat?
Yes, thank you, Martha. It's been a very interesting evening to sit here and listen to the comments about the statement by President Obama this week, and yet to hear the comments from Cheryl sort of juxtaposed to each other, because typically when you're part of an underserved population, one of the things you ask of the authorities, so to speak, is that there be processes set in place to help to assure that everybody has equal opportunity and equal access to whatever the process is that you're talking about. And I do believe, as Jim said, that in this case, the county has set out certain procedures that we do follow to try to assure that any of our hiring is done in a way that is allows fair access to anyone who wants to participate in it and who might choose to apply. And this is, I think, an example of how our best intentions and our adherence to that process may at times have a consequence which may or may not be what we would have originally intended had that process not been in place. However, I think it's very, very important that that process exists and that we do continue to follow it in our hiring practices, which is what we did in this case. And I do support the members of the search committee, other staff in the county, everyone who was involved in that hiring process. I do believe that we did follow the process that we were supposed to have followed in this case. I also trust that the choice that was made and which has been endorsed by us, although we don't have to approve of it, we did enter into discussion about it. I think that we made a good choice. I would not like to have someone new come in here with some kind of perceived cloud that they are not the best choice for the position, because I don't think that's true. I think that the choice that was made is a very good choice, and I think in time that will be borne out. I'm very sorry that Cheryl feels the way she does, and I wish that things were different, but I can't fault the county for the process that we follow. I also want to mention that as much as I'm happy this week to have the president's support in the quest for marriage equality, we still have, as somebody just mentioned a few minutes ago, such long ways to go. Whether, no matter which minority group you're talking about, we have long ways to go. We worked for 31 years in New York State to try to get a Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act passed at the state level. And we finally did that after 31 years. However, that does not include transgender people. And one of the groups, when we talk about the LGBT community, we kind of go LGBT as if we're all part of the same group, which in some ways we are, but in other ways that group of transgender people continue, if there's any group that is a part of that general group that continues to suffer more discrimination on a regular basis, it's people who are transgender. There is currently a bill in the New York State Legislature, which we call GENDA. It's the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act. And stop and think there for a minute. And that act has been passed every year for, I've forgotten how many years now, by the Assembly. The Senate will not even allow it to be brought forward for a vote. And to this day, it's legal in New York State to discriminate against people who are transgender. So I would just like to remind us at the same time we're celebrating that we still have a lot of work to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Anyone else? Well, thank you. For my report, I'd like to pick up with the things that Pat said. I would echo the
gratitude to Cheryl for many years of exemplary service, but emphasize that the committee hiring process was fully public, fully vetted process established by the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, very open. We included members of the community and Dryden Highway supervisor and members of the staff to as part of that process. The very first thing that any committee does in our searches is to establish minimum qualifications and to review the job description and establish minimum qualifications and then screen all applicants according to those min quals, as we say. And those included not just education, but direct field experience and supervisory experience. And that is how we ended up with the pool. And unfortunately, those are the standards that were decided on based on what's required for the job, not based on who might be applying or not applying. And that's a very important screening that was done. And we really wouldn't want to have a highway manager that didn't meet the minimum qualifications that had been set out for the job. So that was that set in motion the process. And I also just want to correct one other piece of information. According to the petition that we got, the majority that petition did not represent the majority of employees in the highway department, but less than a majority. I would also like to go on record on the second item that Pat talked about, and that many of you talked about President Obama's comments, strong statement on marriage equality. I've been many pundits talking about it. One I loved in particular said, you know, just because some gays get married doesn't mean there are fewer marriage licenses for other people. There's no set quota for marriage licenses. Anybody who wants to can get married. And also that people, there's been a lot of change in this country, and, you know, in just a few years. But people really tend not to change from supporting gay marriage to opposing it. People go from opposing it to getting to know some folks, getting to see that their own marriage is not affected by whoever's in the next house down the street. People tend to progress in the direction of more openness and more acceptance. And I think what the president did was certainly to help our country move in that direction, and it really was a thrilling moment. Two other items. At PDEC, actually, Will, are you going to report on the unemployment story about that Martha Armstrong
started?
Why
don't you continue?
Okay. I just wanted to mention that I thought a very important piece of information that Martha Armstrong and Julie Maddock brought to the Planning Committee this past month had to do with the unemployment figures in Tompkins County. We've all been sort of scratching our heads thinking 6.9%, 6.8%, it just doesn't feel like Tompkins County, especially, I mean, it was certainly in the depths of the recession, but we sort of feel like things are getting better. They went back and did some very serious analysis, and I can send everybody the three-page summary that Martha has written, which I'd be happy to do. I hadn't done that yet. Serious analysis identifying a systematic problem that began in April 2011 when, probably due to budget cuts, the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics took over the process of estimating unemployment from the State Department, Department of Labor. I don't know how that saved, who that saved money, but apparently that was the reason behind it. The methodology, therefore, changed. The Bureau of Labor Statistics changed the way they did the methodology, and certainly being less close to our community than the State Department of Labor, they've really made some errors in how they've been calculating it. Julia and Martha have triangulated, have verified with on-the-ground data, have been working with the state folks and the federal folks, and they're confident that in our market, unemployment is not as high as it's been advertised to be. The federal data show that we have lost 4,000 jobs in this community, and that hasn't happened. So they're working on getting the feds to kind of understand the discrepancy, and I've been in touch with Senator Gillibrand's office and Senator Schumer's office so that we can see whether this is a situation that's been replicated in other communities around the country. Hard to imagine that we might be as unique as all that, so we hope that they'll be looking at this methodology and correcting it in the near future. So at any rate, for local decision-making, for local businesses or anybody interested in investing, our unemployment isn't 6.9%. It's something lower, and you can call Martha to find out more. Finally, I put on your desks this unexplained table. This is a schedule of workshops being held by the governor's office, by the Regional Economic Development Council, the people at the state level doing the Regional Economic Development Council administration. As I've told you before, there is a new round of consolidated funding application processes getting going. In fact, CFAs can be submitted anytime from now and through July 12th. So this is a set of workshops around the state that are being offered to explain to people what the process is and how it's different from last year and how people can improve their applications. I will call. You'll notice that in the southern tier, there's one in Corning, one in Norwich, and one in Binghamton. The Binghamton is June 8th from 12 noon to 2:30 p.m. at Binghamton University, Old Union Hall. I will call Kevin McLaughlin, our local administrator, and see if we can get one in Ithaca, preferably for an evening. I see that some of these are in the evening, and that's the least they could do. So we'll see if we can get one. But in the meantime, if anybody is looking at this, you know, we'll try to publicize these. If anybody's looking at doing some kind of an application, there is this one on June 8th. Julie?
Are we constrained from going to other regional ones because there's one in Cortland?
Well, no, but I'm not positive whether there will be a conversation about part of the criteria for what will be considered a good application is whether it fits with the strategic plan developed by your region.
Okay.
So I'm sure some of the information will be applicable, but probably not all of it because they're in a different region. So I'll send out fuller information than this, and I'll ask Marcia to develop a press release to put out when she has a lull in other news. But I wanted you to have this. So any other questions, Carol?
Yeah, I mentioned this in my last report, Facilities and Infrastructure report, and I was going to say something later, but I just felt I think I need to clarify something here. I really want to reiterate my thanks to Cheryl for your work in an interim administrative capacity these last few months in the Highway Department as interim Highway Administrator. And to let you know that I feel that you have served with total distinction in several of our public works offices, and I really appreciate that administrative work. I want to clarify that the process of the F&I committee went through several phases. It was not just a process of deciding how to conduct a search for an existing position. It went through several phases well before, our highway manager left about how and what kind of position and how we wanted to reorganize some of the department, which we did well before there was any there were any candidates or existing people in an administrative capacity, and I hope that that it, in no way that we left you with any impression that that we didn't feel that your work was with total distinction and any lack of appreciation. We will be welcoming in a new highway director in June, and I hope that people will help to contribute and make him feel very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Anything else from my report? County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. I have a couple of update items, and then I'll conclude my report tonight with a request for you to confirm an appointment for the Mental Health Commissioner. I'll ask you as a part of that if you would like to discuss anything in executive session. If not, then I will introduce the appointment and, again, seek your confirmation. We'll ask you at that time also to consider Resolution N, which is a part of the appointment. So before I get to that, just a few of the update items. First, social. The 25-year dinner is coming up this week, this Thursday. We will honor 19 county employees who have been with the county for a combined 475 years, almost as many as Frank Proto. It's a special night for these honorees and their families, so I know there's a lot of things going on at the same time, but if you're able, it's really a nice event to try to attend. It is at Lake Watch Inn. Social hour begins at 5, dinner at 6. So, again, that's this Thursday night. More mundane and more business-oriented things. The budget process moves on. We will be back to you at Budget and Capital at its next meeting with budget targets. We're translating the fiscal goals into targets. That'll come to the Budget Committee at its meeting of May 29th. It'll come to you in your first meeting of June for the approval of targets. And with that, departments will have their basic budget instructions and will begin to prepare their 2013 budgets, and off we go. I wanted to advise you as well that I think you are well aware of the fact that all of our employees are now under contract or agreement except for one unit. The Road Patrol unit is still without a contract, has been so since 2008. There is an arbitration hearing scheduled on May 31st that will look at 2 years, 2008 and 2009. It rolls into a little bit of 2010. But those 2 years will be reviewed by an arbitrator. Both sides will present their cases, and it's at the end of a certain period of time, an arbitrator will come back with a ruling that is binding on us and the union. So that is, again, happening on May 31st. If you'd like to attend, it's an open public session. It begins at 9 o'clock. Last thing by way of updates, I attended a meeting of county administrators last Friday. It got me out of GO committee. But I attended a meeting of county administrators, and you'd be pleased or interested to know that among the things that was on the agenda was the white paper that was prepared here, I think, by Carol and Don Barber, about the taxation of natural gas drilling and recommendations regarding severance taxes and so forth. So that's in circulation, courtesy of NYSAC. It was on the agenda. We talked about that, as well as some of the work that Jay has done with respect to how do you go about the business of assessing these properties once leases are in place and once activity begins. So that's entering the vocabulary of counties throughout New York State. Those are my updates. If there are any questions on those, I can answer them now. If not, again, I would like to seek your confirmation of an appointment. If you would like to take anything into executive session before that, it's the opportunity to do that.
Frank?
Madam Chair, may I move to accept Joe's recommendation with regard to Sue?
Let's let him make it.
Say again?
I don't think he's made the announcement yet.
Why don't you make that recommendation?
I will.
Okay.
First, let me just say a few words of introduction, and then I'll introduce you to Dr. Manchek Smeltzer, who's here with us tonight. We talked earlier about process. The process of selecting a mental health commissioner has been a very long and deliberative one. It began, I think, last November or December with a national search that looked all over the country for individuals who met our high standards of quality. That process included the establishment of a search committee, which I've said before may have been the largest search committee in the history of Tompkins County. It included a dozen people. And it was appropriate that it did because there are so many participants or stakeholders, a community of interest in this position, and we tried to seek broad representation of those interests in the search committee. and pulled together a very good group to go through a very long process. It included the solicitation of resumes. With that, a screening that led to a request for writing samples. With that, created a screening that led to a selection of a group of semi-finalists. That went to a couple of finalists where presentations were made, where interactions occurred between staff and the candidates, and we got to know the candidates much better. So it was a very long, deliberative process that reflected the importance of this position in our community. The result of that process was the recommendation of the search committee of Dr. Susan Romanchek-Smelser, who currently serves as the Director of Community Services and Mental Health in Tioga County. She's held that position since August of 2009. Prior to that, she had a number of positions all in the field. She was a clinical social worker for United Health Services in the Outpatient Mental Health Clinic in Binghamton. She was the program director of the mental health clinic in Tioga County. She was a senior psychiatric social worker in the Broome County Mental Health Clinic. And she began her career in 1986 as a hospice social worker in Lourdes Hospital in Binghamton. And those of us who have had some working relationships with folks who work in hospice know that that's the first step towards sainthood. So that's another part of her credentials. Dr. Romanchek-Smelser has a PhD in human development and social work from Marywood University, which is in Scranton, Pennsylvania. She also has an MSW from that same institution. And she knows this community because she has a Bachelor's of Science from Cornell in Human Development and Family Studies. She, again, has gone through a very long search process. We emerged from that process very comfortable with the fact that Susan is a leader who we believe is very competent to guide the mental health department and this community through a very complicated period in terms of mental health programs and financing. We think we have a good leader that can carry us through. We think that Susan is a person who will engage the community and the department in a way that will ensure that the tradition of extremely high quality in mental health services will be maintained. Last week, her appointment was recommended by the Mental Health Services Board in a unanimous vote of that board. And tonight I'm here to ask for your confirmation of my appointment of Dr. Susan Romanchek-Smelser to be our next mental health commissioner. So with that, I would ask for a motion and a confirmation vote.
Thank you. I'd like to move that we confirm Joe's recommendation to appoint Dr. Romanchek-Smelser to the position of Commissioner of Mental Health.
Seconded by Jim. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Jim. Frank,
can you speak up? Joe and Susan, congratulations. But one word of thanks. Will and I were among 10 or 12 individuals with Betsy and several others to serve on the review committee. And it was a pretty intense group. And we had some fun as well. If you've ever sat next to Larry Roberts for months, it can be fun. But I want to, personally, as chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee, I want to certainly thank Susan and Joe. Steve Estes. Steve was great in pulling us all together and cracking the whip. I'm probably the least fluent with computers, and he even made me understand what was going on. So congratulations again, and thank you to the review committee. We really, I think, had a pretty good time. Will was on the committee as well. Would you like to say something?
I would only second what Frank said. It was a very challenging process. I think for the committee members, I have to assume for all the candidates, we've really put you guys through the ringer. We were very careful to structure the process in a way that would be genuinely fair. And this was the first time I had the privilege to participate in such a process for the county. But I have to say I came away very... very impressed with the process that we used. We brought a lot of different people to the table with different connections to the mental health community, as well as people on the legislature. And I think it was a very, very good learning process. I hope that all the candidates felt that they were treated fairly. But I think in the end, there was a consensus that we made a very good choice, and I'm really looking forward to working with Dr. Smelsker.
Thank you, Will. Leslin, and then Frank.
No, I did not have the opportunity to sit on the search committee, although I love sitting on 12-member search committees with Joe. But I did have the chance to read about Susan and your very impressive resume. And I can assure you that you will get my confirmation vote if you can figure out how to make this room warmer. With all those credentials, you must know how warm this doggone place is. So, thank you for applying and for being here.
I think the answer is sit over there.
It's cold over there, too.
I don't pull on my socks.
We just have two layers of people here.
All right, Kathy's going to do some magic here. I just wanted to thank you all. I'd like to ask Dr. Mantic-Spelcher if she'd like to make a few remarks. And while you're coming up, I just want to thank Betsy. This has been such an unusual transition, such a difficult transition. Doctor, we welcome you with gratitude and you know, excitement, but we do have to stop and remember that Bob DeLuca has been missed every day since he's been gone, and Betsy, you've been the one that really has held all of your department together and kept the agencies and everybody working together so that the clients really didn't miss a beat. There was, you know, everything that was needed was there, and it was just a tremendous gift to the community, and we appreciate it. So thank you. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you. I would just like to say I'm honored to have been chosen. I have to say that I don't think I've ever gone through an interview process where there was a three-question essay test as the welcome to the application process. It is a challenging time for behavioral health and healthcare in general. My goal is to try to help the system through a very major transformation and still maintain quality of care for all of our citizens who need our services. And just one more thing, I would like to say that I know that it is, I did work with Bob a long time ago, with Bob DeLuca, so I'm very aware of who he is and what he meant to this community, and so I'm not insensitive to the fact that this has been a difficult transition for the mental health clinic and probably for the community. I certainly hope that I can fill his shoes and look forward to working with all of you. Thank you.
And as a fellow HCFS alumna, I want to say great. Kathy. What?
I know
we have to vote. You had something, Frank, you want to add, and then Kathy?
Yeah, I wanted to bring to your attention that something Will started to mention. With all of her credentials, Susan was the only candidate that I recall. There were several of us on the committee, I think 12 or something like that, and we had 25 questions, but within the questions we hid 7 or 8 other questions. And Susan, do you remember that, Will?
I do remember that.
And Susan was very perceptive about saying, well, you know, she was kind to say she never had to go through an interview with 3 essay questions, but there were 17 other hidden questions in there. And we had a good time. It was very interesting.
Oh,
she didn't have a good time. We had a good time. Thanks, Martha.
Kathy, then Leslie.
I just thought it would be most appropriate to vote before we continue as a matter of process.
Okay. Well, I'd like to ask Leslie if you'd like to speak.
No, it's just very quickly wanted to echo your sentiments of thanking Betsy, but there's a caveat to it because it means then that I expect to see her back at WDIC.
All right. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of the appointment of Dr. Romantic Smeltzer to Mental Health Commissioner, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That is unanimous. Thank you and welcome to Tompkins County. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Did you want to do resolution?
I'm sorry, that's right. Maybe you don't want to leave yet. All right. Jim, do you want to take resolution N?
I will. It's resolution N, authorizing the Commissioner of Mental Health to receive 3 weeks of vacation time a year, and I would move that.
Seconded by Frank. There's a revision in your packet. Do you see that?
Yeah, it's in there.
That's okay. That's what you're moving.
Yes, that's
okay,
what I moved.
And Frank? Okay. That's what's on the table. Kathy?
Thanks. I just have a question for information purposes. Are there any other employees at the administrative level that have gotten this kind of agreement where they get more vacation time? As I understand it from reading this, she would get modification of fringe benefits to include 3 weeks of vacation at the time of hire and remain at 3 weeks annually upon her anniversary date until she is eligible to accrue 3 weeks of vacation time. Is there any other member of our administration team that has gotten a similar proviso or whatever the word is?
Yeah.
Yeah, and first, it usually takes 5 years to get to three-week mark, so it's accelerating that. To my understanding, there's been one other appointment that's been made over the past, let's say, decade or so, and I think it was a 4-week allocation of vacation time, so this would be the second that I'm aware of over the last 10 years or so.
Ready to vote? All in favor of revised N, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you all very much. All set, John?
Thank you. And I also want to acknowledge the work. Polly Younger chaired the search committee, and I really should acknowledge the work she did in coordinating that effort, and it was really appreciated.
All right. Thank you very much. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
I do not have a report.
All right. David Squires, Finance Director.
I put in your box this evening the listing of properties that are currently in our process for foreclosure. The next step in this process is planning. The planning department will make a recommendation of which properties should be auctioned off, or other recommendations. We had the auction scheduled for June 25th. It's troubling. We have so many residential properties, 11 right now, and about six of them are occupied. So that's sort of unusual. But we've been working, trying to get people in. I've alerted the Department of Social Services that there may be some unusual. People may need some assistance. So. But if you would know any of these people in their districts, you know, I'm open to talking to them and trying to help them out.
Thank you, David. Any questions? Dooley.
Do you know when we'll hear from the planning department if they have any recommendations on withholding a property?
Shortly. I know that Scott Doyle's working on it. He called me. A week.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to try to move up a couple things to try to get quickly before Jim has to shut us down to switch his CDs. So if we can try to do the next couple of things relatively quickly. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda?
Yes.
Will.
So I would like to withdraw your – Resolution H, approval of bylaws of the Thompson County Strategic Tourism Planning Board. And I would also like to withdraw the member filed resolution that I put in, which was the resolution, which is JL, a proposed amendment to the Constitution of the United States.
Okay. Anything else? All right, I'll go through the consent agenda. Please holler out if you want anything to be pulled off. Approval of budget transfer, planning department. Authorization to execute supplemental agreement with Hunt Engineers, Architects, and Land Surveyors, PC, for bridge replacement design services, West Seneca Road over Boardman Creek. Authorization to execute a contract with Delta Engineers, Architects, and Land Surveyors, PC, for bridge replacement design services, Waterburg Road, County Road 136, over Tagannock Creek. And audit of final payment, Suit Corporation, County Road 110, Ellis Hella Road, Phase 1 Reconstruction, Town of Dryden. And appointments to the Air Services Board, Michael S. Hall. To Personal Emergency Response Service Advisory Board, Dorothy Deitch. And to the Planning Advisory Board, Michelle Courtney Berry. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Kathy, second by Dooley. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Those are unanimous. I would like to ask Frank to take the REC partnership. Resolution J. Resolution. Amy is in the back.
Do you want a committee report at the same time?
No, if we can hold off on that,
okay.
That'd be great.
All right. I'd like to move Resolution J, adoption of the Recreation Partnership 2013 to 2017 agreement.
Second by Will. Any discussion? Kathy.
It was my understanding that we got a buy-in from all the municipalities that have been reflected in the past.
The report that we had at the committee was they had heard from most of the... My recollection is that they were waiting on one, but the indication was that everybody else had agreed. So I can't say that 100% because I don't think that was the report at the committee.
Amy, do you have any more?
Amy's here.
Yeah.
All of the municipalities are going through the same process right now, doing the resolutions and sending them in. We have not heard from any of the municipalities that they are not going through that process.
Right.
We're starting to receive the resolutions. We've received two in at this point. We know of 4 to 5 others that have started the process. So that's where we stand right now.
Yes?
I just think it's great that in these tough times we managed to get this kind of unanimity and support for this. And I know that hasn't always been the case in the past, so I want to give kudos to all the staff and to Amy for her good work.
All right. Great. Ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution J, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Great. Thanks very much.
And
now I'm going to ask for Gio Dooley if you could take the local law, E. We have a few minutes before Jim has to break down the cameras. I think we've already had a lot of the discussion, and I hope we don't have to feel that we need to repeat what's been said already this evening. So if we could try to go through that.
I would like to, but I've spent some time trying to rewrite the first part of this. Should I try to offer that now?
I think you need to offer what was passed at the committee and then can, on a second, bite, offer an amendment.
Well, I'll move adoption of local law to opt out of Section 487 of the New York State Real Property Tax Law.
Seconded by Pat. Discussion? Let's start with Dooley.
I think you all found in your folders a first attempt at putting in some language to indicate what we were really thinking about. But listening to the comments tonight, I think it would be highly desirable to not act on this tonight, but to try to write a more comprehensive findings statement to introduce this be the first part of the local law, and I'll try to read you what I have, but it's not a finished product. May I do that?
Sure.
The Tompkins, so it would, before sections 1, 2, and 3, there would be a findings section. Tompkins County Legislature finds that the first commercial-scale wind farm has been proposed for construction in Tompkins County. The county, through its Industrial Development Agency, would like to participate in negotiating a pilot agreement for this wind farm, along with the school district and town in which it is located. And those two jurisdictions have already opted out of RPT Section 487. RPT Section 487 makes no distinction between residential scale and commercial scale facilities. RPT Section 487 does allow the county to opt in and opt out of Section 487 at will. Shall I keep going?
I can't find what you're saying. It's not there.
Okay. I tried to write something that was more comprehensive, which is what I would like
to do. Okay, so you've got this in our packets, which is some amount of what you've just read is in here.
It's about a quarter of it, yes.
Okay. I'm going to take Jim and then Mike.
I would be happiest if I could withdraw this, but I am not sure people want me to do that.
And I would join your happiness.
I do.
Because I heard you say at the beginning, it's not ready for prime time, and it sounds like we're rewriting it now. So can I just move to refer it back to committee?
Well, can we have some more comments first before you do that?
It's up to Jim if you want to move.
My referral. That's what we should do, is talk about a resolution we're going to refer back. Wise use of time.
Mike?
Resolution E, I think, properly sets out our understanding of this whole matter, the rather complicated way we're having to jump through some hoops here to both protect our tax base and also to protect people who want to be able to have solar improvements for residential areas. The local law, which is here, and prepared, I assume, by our county attorney, is fairly simple. I think it should be left the way it is, the local law, and that the resolution be allowed to stand by itself.
Brian, then Catherine.
I would tend to agree with that. I don't think there's any. Oftentimes, we end up putting a whole bunch of historical stuff, explanatory stuff in later, which, in my way of thinking, is really not necessary. But so I would be in favor of just going forward the way it is. Having said that, if we don't do that, my question is, is this going to put behind any pilot discussions as far as a timetable? You know what I mean. If someone could answer that for me, I guess that would...
Yes, as I said earlier, the IDA meets on Thursday, and on the agenda is discussion of this issue. It doesn't make any sense to me to appoint a negotiating team for the town and the school district while the county is still hanging out there, so the whole... I would think the whole process is logically going to be held up until we get the county to decide one way or the other.
Okay, but knowing that we have next year as a time when construction is beginning, is it advantageous for us to have that pilot in place the sooner the better, or if we end up putting our portion off, until the next meeting or two, say a month, is that going to impact a timetable to get the pilot in place?
My concern is, it's been expressed, that building a road to the site could be interpreted as beginning construction. That can happen tomorrow. If that happened tomorrow, before the pilot is in place, the property is exempt. The project is exempt. There is... in fact, there's not even a pilot then for the town and school district. So I don't know how that would work, but certainly it would be exempt from county property taxes at the very least.
Okay. So you're saying the sooner the better?
Absolutely. Okay. Kathy, did you have your hand up?
Yes.
And then Frank and Jim, right? And Dooley. Okay. Kathy.
As you all know, I'm not somebody that likes to rush to judgment or hurry a process. I'm also not an attorney, which makes me perhaps unique. No, however, I guess there's one other person on this board that is an attorney. My point is that this is a difficult situation. We all know that, but we've come up with, to the best of our knowledge and staff's knowledge, something that will help us deal with this situation. But we do have to move on it, because I believe that the longer we wait, the more complicated this can get for us, not just because of the possibility of a road being built. We've already got municipalities that have weighed in on this. I'm okay with going ahead with it now. Frankly, that's my preference. If you decide to send it back to committee, I'm going to be, you know, sucking between my teeth and clucking a lot, because I believe that it's going to be a recipe for disaster. I think in this particular situation, to delay is to disserve everyone involved, and that we need to just suck it up and make the decision. That's the way I think.
Frank, Jim, and Dooley.
Thanks, Martha. line 25 in the resolution, where the whereas that begins on line 25, and then the proposed local law, even Dooley's proposed revision, if it survives or even presented, states that in addition to large-scale wind, solar, and farm waste energy systems, does the state 487 require that farm waste systems be included in this? It requires that?
Yeah, Jay's nodding.
You can't take it apart.
I'm sorry?
You can't take it apart.
Yes. They're all treated the same.
So if we pass this, then anyone that the same, I didn't see any farmers out here. I only saw homeowners that have solar panels or whatever. Anyone that has a farm waste system, like the one that exists in Dryden, would suddenly be, their exemption would go away. Is that how I understand this?
Jay?
Their exemption wouldn't go away. If their exemption is in place right now, it wouldn't go away. As it currently stands, I don't believe we have any exemptions for a farm waste energy system in Tompkins County.
Because of the similar issue that you don't have any identified increase in value attributable to the system?
No, that we haven't had anybody apply for that exemption.
Okay.
So I haven't had to research that to see if it does add value. I don't know.
Let me ask the second half of that, Jay. Does this, because it's related to farming, do we need to go to Ag and Markets, what is it, Part 301 of the Ag and Markets laws and regulations? Do we know, even though it may be included in whatever the state is proposing, are farms exempt anyway?
I don't know that answer. I'd have to refer to Jonathan on that.
Okay, well, I'm going to be interested in Jim's motion or move to refer this to committee. Whatever.
I have withdrawn it.
Well, then I might bring that up after everybody else has an opportunity to comment.
Jim and then Dooley.
Now, Jay, you're at the microphone. You obviously know this resolution inside and out, I hope. And can you tell me the negative of us passing this as it is right now, based on all the things you heard around the room today? Are there any connected with it?
The negative would be what Martha just stated. If this wind farm were to start construction, and starting construction is a wide range, just starting a road, putting a shovel in the ground could start construction. that would have this property exempt from county taxes.
I have another question, and anyone can answer around the room. Black Oak Wind Farm, Enfield, by Black Oak, Town of Enfield, have they applied for a building permit at all in the Town of Enfield? Have you heard anything about that? I have never heard anything about that, and I don't know if they've even gotten to that point to be able to do that. And the other question that I want to know the answer to, if someone wants to say it out loud, does this operation actually have any funds committed to it to build a major project other than a man said he was an investor in the back? You know, I could write a check for $100, I'd be an investor. But, you know, is there really a project? I've heard it talked about for 6 years, and I've never seen a drawing. I've never seen anything that you could even move to a point of putting the shovel in the ground.
It's my understanding that they do have a new board, new structure, and they're actively raising money. I haven't seen their books or anything, but I think it's much more viable than it was. Julie and Pat.
I'm not sure that they can go forward with construction until they complete their seeker documents, and I believe they have to have enough money to then move to an initial public offering to raise the rest of the money. I don't think that they can build a road that would count as construction at this time or for quite a few months. So I understand why you're worried, in theory, but I'm not sure it applies in this case at this time.
Pat?
Two things I'd like to say. One is that, Jim, I've personally spoken to people who have invested in this.
Pat, can you use your microphone?
I'm sorry. My voice is not very strong tonight. I have personally spoken with people who have invested in this, and it's my impression that they are, as you said, Martha, considerably further down the road at this point than they were even just a few months ago. My question is, although I think I understand Dooley, is it because of the comments we heard here tonight that you're trying to add language to this? What is the point of what you're trying to do? I mean, you may not have the exact language, but I'm not sure I understand why you're trying to change it.
Go ahead.
Well, I agree with Mike that Resolution E says a lot of good stuff. But I also think that a local law stands on its own. And the form a local law can include a finding statement. And based on what I heard tonight, and thinking more about this during the meeting, it seems to me that that might be the best way to modify this local law to include certain language that will make clearer why we're doing this. And the sections of the local law itself, three sentences, would not be changed. Does that help you?
It does. And I would say that I do. Thank you. That helps me understand what you're trying to do. I think that the language as it is stands on its own and includes the concepts that you're trying to spell out more clearly. And I would support what Kathy said a few minutes ago and be comfortable, very comfortable, with going ahead and passing this tonight.
Mike, and then Carol.
I'd like to call a question on the resolution.
Is there a second? Jim? So the resolution as it stands is what came out of committee, with the local law as it came out of committee, is what we're calling the resolution, calling the question on. So anyone, please raise, if you have something to say, you might want to vote against it. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed? 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 to 9. That passes. 9 to 5. Is that the right number? 9 to 5, that passes. So In front of us is Resolution E with local law as passed by committee. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. Four. That passes 10-4. All right. Carol?
Yeah, I'd like the opportunity to just register why I voted against this. I realized through the discussion tonight and then looking at the resolution again that I had a real problem with the use of the wording large scale in two of the whereases. And I know they're just whereases, but it talks about the intent of the legislature to really just address large-scale renewable investment. And I don't know that I think that really was our intent, and I would have appreciated the opportunity to talk about that. I refrained from raising my hand as people were talking about the first point that had been raised, and I would have appreciated the opportunity to raise my point before everybody rushed to vote. So that is why I voted against it, and other than that, I did think that that this was an action that we needed to do at this time. I still would like to see our staff look into ways to address the question of whether we can address smaller scale, not only large scale, installations when this comes back to us.
Frank, and then I'd like to take a recess.
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I ask that a copy of this local law as well as the resolution be forwarded to the Ag and Farmland Protection Board with just the section on farms highlighted. Rachel Crispell is the chair. Monica Roth would be the contact person. Thank you, Martha.
Okay. Thank you all. Yes, Delene.
I would ask that the minutes indicate that although I authored Resolution E, I voted against it because I wish to modify the local law.
All right. I'd like to take a 10-minute recess. Be back in your seats at 5:00. Thank you.